Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling. Episode 254, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are 2 months away from 5 years, and ladies and gentlemen, this, I've been waiting for this for so long. As you know, I interview someone from WWE, NXT, TNA, ROH, Lucha Underground every week. However, I've been waiting for this interview for quite some time. I don't think he knows this, but he knows it now. I've said it many times on my show. This person is my current favorite wrestler. He is the best wrestler in the world. He is none other, ladies and gentlemen. Without further ado, I'm honored to have this person on my show, former Ring of Honor world champion, the man, the greatest wrestler in the world. He is Jay Lethal. How are you tonight, sir?
Well, with an introduction like that, how can I not be doing great?
Awesome, man. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome, man. So you got a big event coming up on Sunday here in Columbus, Ohio, my stomping grounds. Let the listeners know about that.
Yep, we're coming to Columbus, Ohio. Unfortunately, I'm not a big fan of the cold weather, but I'll deal with it. I'll put up with it because we got a heck of a show. Of course, the Adam Cole, the Ring of Honor World Champion, will be there along with his henchman, the Hangman Adam Page, which coincidentally is my opponent for that day because I'll be teaming with Bobby Fish. But also, you got the greatest tag team in the world, the Young Bucks. They're on the show against War Machine. You got the Kingdom is going to be there. Motor City Machine Guns will be there, who actually are not too far. They're just a quick drive to Ohio, actually.
Yeah, they're from Michigan, unfortunately.
And let's not forget, last but not least, you have the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes, who I'll eventually have my revenge on, because I don't know if you know, but Cody Rhodes' debut in Ring of Honor was not so great, in my opinion. He cheated, kicked me in the lower region. He cheated, we'll just say, to score his first victory. And I'm excited to step into the ring with him again so I can get that victory back.
Absolutely. And that was final battle back in December. That everybody was excited about Cody. He was playing more of a babyface role after he left the WWE and doing some indie work, and then he went rogue on you, Jay.
He did.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Speaking of that, you've came to the light in recent months, but for a while there, you were with Truth Martini in the House of Truth. And after a very long stint of being a babyface, you became a heel and became one of the longest reigning ROH champions of all time. Now, let us know just your experience about just playing the heel role, turning heel. It's been so long before then that you were a heel, and you had some heel work earlier in your career, but throughout most of your TNA run, you were a babyface and ROH as well. So let everybody know just the transition of playing a heel. How did it all come about? Whose idea was it? And what are your overall thoughts of that run?
Okay, cool. So it was definitely my idea. This being the bad guy is something that I always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And the proof is actually in the pudding. I mean, I make no qualms about letting everybody know who my two favorite wrestlers are and were, that being Ric Flair and the Macho Man Randy Savage.
That's right.
I feel that both of these two men really excelled when they were the bad guy. For instance, Macho Man making his ring valet Elizabeth stand in one particular spot outside the ring. And then him getting so frustrated at his opponent that he jumps out of the ring, and now he's mad that Elizabeth is standing in the exact spot that he made her stand in. And then he moves her to the other side. What a bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, and Ric Flair, his bad guy work speaks for itself. So I've always been drawn and wanted to be the bad guy. It's just that I never really got a chance to do it. And because I was the good guy for so many years, that means that I got to stand across the ring from almost every type of bad guy wrestler there is. The brawler bad guy, the high flyer bad guy. I got to stand on the opposite side of the ring from them all. And during that process, I got to pick and choose and nitpick at the little things that this bad guy did that I liked. And then I got to pick something from this bad guy that I liked. So when I became the bad guy, all I was doing was taking everything that a bad guy did that I liked, and I put it and meshed it all into one. Sprinkles from Randy Savage, bits from Ric Flair, bits from every wrestler that I'd been in the ring with who was the bad guy at that time. And that, I feel like it kind of made it a little bit easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I coming back to Ring of Honor for my second run before winning the Ring of Honor World Championship, I begged and pleaded to be the bad guy. And I fell in love with Truth Martini. I fell in love with his work because up until my second time returning to Ring of Honor, I had never seen, met, or heard of Truth Martini. Just because I didn't really keep my ear, you know, too close to the wrestling world, I must admit that when I work for a particular company, I kind of just hone in and zero in on that company. As a wrestler, we got to watch what's going on other places, but...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I really, really focus on where I am at that particular point in time, which is why I'd never heard of Truth Martini. So the first time I saw his work, I just instantly said, I need to be with this person because what we could do together would be super cool. And luckily after a couple months of begging and pleading, they let me try it. And I think it worked out really, really well.
Oh yeah, I think so too. I love the theme music. It's a little faster now since you're babyface again, but that theme music fit you for so much. And you know, I'm old school when it comes to wrestling, so I'm all about cadences and ring entrances. And I noticed, you know, when you slowly put your arms up, the cues, even that is something that the fan is just kind of salivating over, waiting for you to have that moment, you know. And,
I love it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And when you had the belt, actually when you had both belts, the world and the TV title, it was even sweeter. So, speaking of championships, though, you talked about Ric Flair. He's your inspiration. A couple things that about Ric Flair I want to ask you. So, as you know, it doesn't take anyone who knows wrestling not to know that John Cena has recently tied Ric Flair's record of 16 times, but according to Ric Flair, it's 18 times if you count the WCW International Championship. So unofficially 16, but to the man, it's 18. What are your overall thoughts of Cena tying that championship reign total?
I think it's amazing. I think any time that you can with one particular person in the wrestling business, in a one particular company, have them last so long, give them the belt, then take it away, and then give them the belt, and then take it away, and yet every single time gets some sort of reaction, I think is a great testament to John Cena. I mean, I think, and like I said, you know, I kind of zero in on the company I work for at the particular time. But as a wrestler, we have to watch everything if we want to really excel. And one of the cool things I think about John Cena is I think he's super loved by all. But it's just a cool thing sometimes to boo him. Mm-hmm. But just because the boos are happening doesn't mean that they don't like him. I just think, just like Kurt Angle's music where the fans chant, "You suck."
Yeah.
"You suck." I remember chanting along just because it was cool at the time, but I loved Kurt Angle. Mm-hmm. Man, yeah, he was the greatest wrestler. He still is. It's just something to be said about that cool, having that coolness factor too, where it's like, just cool to boo him, but we still love him. You know what I mean? But I think 16 times, and I'm sure there'll be more.
Yeah.
Because like I said, to still at this point in time with all those changes and wins and losses, to still be getting a reaction, I mean, that's what we dream of. That's what we hope for.
Very true. Yeah, I think you bring a good point about the Kurt Angle thing. When they announced him for the Hall of Fame, I was hoping that they used his ECW music because I kind of got like upset. Like, don't say he sucks. He's the Hall of Fame inductee. What are you talking about?
So, right, yeah. Right. But it's cool.
Yeah,
it's
cool. True. I mean, you have to say that when the music comes on. You're right.
Right, and shit goes with the music. Oh man, it's so cool.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, I liked the ECW music though. It was a little bit more emotional, and it didn't have the pattern where you can chant that. You couldn't really insert that, you know, in that ECW music.
Right.
So yeah, but another thing about Ric Flair is just one of my favorite TNA moments of all time. Just I'm chuckling even thinking about it now. Just when Ric Flair was manager of Fortune, and you came out and did the impersonation. That's one of the most funny, probably the funniest moment of you. And I've followed your career for quite some time, early ROH days, and especially when you debuted in TNA and so forth. I personally think that's probably the funniest moment. I remember when I think it was PWG that you did, Sid. Was that PWG that you did the Sid impersonation in?
Actually, the Sid impersonation I did at my home, the place that Jay Lethal started.
Jersey Championship?
Which was a place, yes.
Okay,
Jersey All Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, Jersey All Pro, yeah.
It was Jersey All Pro Wrestling's building, but it was actually technically
Pro Wrestling Syndicate, right?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, I said PWG. Yeah, I mean Pro Wrestling Syndicate. Yeah, I think that was absolutely hilarious too.
And that was, believe it or not, was only decided, I'm gonna say 5-10 minutes before it actually was done, just
really?
Because, he hadn't made it to the show.
Right.
And I remember there was just a big uproar in the locker room because, you know, not to put his business out there, but I mean, well, they did that already, but I think he had been paid for the show already from what I was told. I don't know if that's true, but he had been paid for the show, didn't show up. So in the locker room, there was a big uproar because they were panicking. They didn't know what to do. And like people had paid to see him. So I mean, only up until 5-10 minutes did Matt Hardy and I come up with this thing where, you know, I do the impressions, so why don't I just pretend to be Sid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was hilarious, absolutely hilarious. Yeah, I mean, just as a lifelong wrestling fan, just the small cadences. Like I always say, man, like I always say that wrestling is – and I've been watching wrestling over 30 years. I always say wrestling is 70% of what happens outside and 30% of what's inside. I mean, you could have you could have a wrestling clinic, but if people aren't drawn to your character, I mean, it's just a bunch of flipping flying, and you know, it's
right.
Yeah, and just the pounds that you did, and just the cadences, and just the who's the man, just I mean, to the T, it was absolutely hilarious. And just the Flair bit was just I mean, I can watch it now. It was years ago, and I can watch it now, probably well after this interview, and it was just so hilarious. Just kind of recreate that moment for us, as far as just who planned it? How much of it was just off the cuff? How did that all come about?
This it?
The Flair moment in TNA.
I'm sorry. I'm totally sorry. The Flair moment, the real story here is when I was with TNA, we had an overseas tour. We were touring the UK, and on one of our off days, and I'm a big drinker, so therefore it doesn't take much to get me drunk. And on one of the off days, we all hung out at the bar in the hotel, and I had a few too many, which I think was about two or three of whatever the Dudley boys were feeding me. And lo and behold, we found out that I had this amazing Ric Flair impression, which I had never even attempted up until that point. I didn't even know how it really started, like who was talking about Ric Flair or why I started doing that, but that's how we found that I could do it. And then for weeks in the locker room, I would do it just because everybody would ask me to, because it was that good, especially Earl Hebner, who like knew Flair personally. I could not walk past Earl Hebner without him making me do the impression of Ric Flair. He loved it so much. And then out of the blue, I heard that Ric Flair would be coming to TNA. So think of it like this. This is how it went. Earl Hebner and I were really close. Of course, him being close to Ric Flair wanted me to do the impression. It became this thing where Earl Hebner and I didn't even say hello to each other. It wasn't, oh, hey, Earl, how are you? Instead of doing that, we would woo to each other. So that became our hello and our goodbye, just wooing to each other, Ric Flair style. And I remember one day I got to the Impact Zone at the time, and Earl Hebner came into the room, and I gave him my traditional woo because that was our hello. And he didn't say anything. And I said, hey, what's up? And then he told me, you'll never believe and you'll never guess who's coming. And I lost my mind because, like I said, I'm a huge Macho Man and Ric Flair fan. And then, of course, when Flair got there, he heard about the impression that I could do. And I went up to meet him for the first time. And he made me do it right there in front of everybody for him. And that, he got a big kick out of that. And then later on, I find out that we're going to do a little program. I'm going to do this in-ring interview with him where I do the impression and he gets mad. That was the only thing scheduled. That was the only thing planned about it. You go to the ring, I do the impression, he gets mad. What we were going to be saying was not planned out. The woo-off was not planned out. That stuff was all on the fly, if you can believe it. And I was as nervous as I could be because up until that point, I don't know if you followed my career while I was there, but they had never given me a live microphone in front of a live crowd.
Right.
And now the first time you do it, you want me to go in there with the master of the promo, Ric Flair. It was the most nervous I've ever been in my life. But yeah, that's how that all came about.
Yeah, that was.
But that stuff just prepared me, you know. That stuff prepared me for this awesome run that I'm having now. Because I remember I was still shy and a little timid there. Mm-hmm. And that just made me super comfortable in front of the crowd. And ultimately, I mean, I accredit a lot of that to my work in Ring of Honor right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that's a very, very good link because it just, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you have the jitters about something that you're nervous about, you know, but it's like once you do it, you know, I've been a journalist for a while now, but just interviewing certain people, you know, that I loved, you know, it's like at first when you start interviewing people, you kind of get the jitters, but I've been doing it for so long now that it's still great. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's still amazing, but you grow confidence in doing it, you know? And I think people who's followed you for a number of years see that now, you know, it seems like you were just a fan, you know, and I always believe that too. I think wrestlers should still be fans of their work. Because it really seemed like in that segment, not only were, you know, you hilarious as ever, you were still a fan of Ric Flair, and it kind of exuded that. And that's what I appreciate about it as well.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Thank you for saying that. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So let the fans know one more time, where can we find you on social media, and one more time about what's going on in Columbus and there's, you know, other dates of ROH as well.
Sure. We live in the age of social media and networking, and everybody and their mother has a Twitter and a Facebook and a website. So mine just so happens to be at The Lethal J. That's right. So on all of my social media, which I really only use Twitter as my main one, my handle is at The Lethal J, and everything is spelled out. THELETHALJAY, The Lethal J. They even have a website, thelethalj.com. And that's where you can reach me if anybody's in the Tampa area and looking to get their start in professional wrestling. I actually have a school, so just go to my website, thelethalj.com, and look under the training section until you find it. And now we're going to be rolling into Columbus, Ohio here with, I mean, anytime Ring of Honor comes to town, we put on the best professional wrestling product on the planet. We really focus on our in-ring competition, in-ring product. In order to do that, you got to have some of the greatest wrestlers in the world. And if you need proof that Ring of Honor has the greatest roster in the world, just look at all the other companies out there who constantly pluck from the Ring of Honor roster just to make their product better. Because Ring of Honor is innovative, and we really know how to find talent. Like I said, speaking of talent, we got guys like the greatest tag team in the world, the Young Bucks. We'll be in Columbus, Ohio. War Machine will be in Columbus, Ohio. All of our champions will be there, including the newly signed Marty Scurll, straight from the UK. He is the Ring of Honor television champion. He will be there. Ring of Honor world champion Adam Cole will be there. I'm going to get my hands on him, in fact. I've had team with Bobby Fish. We got the Briscoes. The Briscoes will be there. I mean, this show is loaded. Anytime Ring of Honor comes to town, like I said, you can expect to see the best professional wrestling on the planet. And that just so happens to be Sunday, February 12th, 7 p.m. bell time. And that is, I believe it's at 405 Neal Avenue in Columbus, Ohio. I think it's called Express Live.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's also the same place where NXT is held as well, so it's a great
venue. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that. I mean, the fans are the ultimate winners, you know? Like, we just saw NXT here. Man, now we do get to see Ring of Honor. Just, man, I love stuff like that. Man,
yeah.
It's so cool.
Absolutely. You said it's so cool. That's my line.
it's amazing to think that none of that stuff was written out. Because Ric Flair doesn't allow anything to be written out for him in promos. Therefore, they couldn't tell me what to say because they didn't know what he was going to say. And that made me even more nervous.
Yeah.
So, like, all of that stuff as terrifying as it was all on the fly, and I just tried my hardest to keep up with the master.
Yeah, that's and it was you kept up with the master and created a masterpiece. So absolutely.
Oh, thank you. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, Jay. I really appreciate it, and I'll be there on Sunday, man, and hopefully I'll see you then.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll get a picture.
Sounds like a plan, Jay. I'll talk to you then. And thanks all the listeners for listening to this interview. And you have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Thanks. Take
care.
Thank you so much, Jay Lethal, the greatest wrestler in the world, ladies and gentlemen. Jay Lethal. I want to play a snippet of something. I know that a lot of people are listening to the show tonight, and I don't want to give you a disservice. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after this.
Nature Boy is not going to be happy about this. Speaking of Jay Lethal, interrupted Ric Flair and his Fortune faction.
To be on the road, up and down, late nights, parties, kissing the girls, and making them cry. With the Horsemen, you guys, as far as I'm concerned, are no horsemen. That is disrespectful to me and this wrestling business.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, this wrestling business. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we got an action-packed show tonight with the man, the manager of managers, the talent agent of talent agents. He is from Fiesta Pro Wrestling. He is from East Coast Wrestling Association. He is the independent sensation, AJ Pan. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, Chris. How you doing? Glad to be back on.
Oh, fantastic. It's great to have you back on, man. Jay Lethal, man, what a wonderful time.
Oh, Jay Lethal's fantastic. I've had the privilege of working with him a couple of times. He's one of the best around right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt, he's. You know, we're going to talk about our top five favorite tag teams of all time. The flavor of the week for the listeners. And here's the thing. As far as, you know, there's my top five of all time, which I've said many times from, you know, one is Sting, two is Dusty Rhodes, three is Ricky Steamboat, four is Chris Jericho, five is Booker T. But nowadays, the past few years, I followed TNA, and I followed Jay Lethal for a dozen years now. Over the past few years, man, Jay Lethal's work has just been so amazing. And he's been my favorite wrestler, so it was great to have him on the show tonight, and it's great to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be on. I had a blast last time, and yeah, I'm looking forward to being back tonight. We got a lot to discuss, I see.
We sure do, absolutely. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. The Rock and Roll Express. Spoiler alert, they're in my top five. So I got four more teams at the end of the show, but they are certainly my top five. I'm not going to tell you where they are in my top five, but they are one of my top five of all time. The Rock and Roll Express inducted, recently announced that they would be the inductees in the Hall of Fame. AJ, I think there's no dispute that the Rock and Roll Express deserves to be in. And, the well-deserved.
Oh, without question. So many memorable moments and feuds. The Midnight Express, the feuds with Jim Cornette, even, like, you know, kind of recent. Well, not recently, but, you know, like in the 90s with the Heavenly Bodies and Smoky mm-hmm. Mountain and WWF even. Yeah, totally. They were trailblazers and originals. You know, it was set on Raw. You know, before they were the Rockers, they were the Rock and Roll Express.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Shawn Michaels tweeted not too far after the announcement that, you know, he was just, it was well deserved. And he was talking about how the Rock and Roll Express were pivotal in his career, starting off. Of course, you know, we all know that, you know, him and Marty Jannetty were the midnight rockers in the AWA, and then, you know, were the rockers in the WWF at the time. And yeah, so, I mean, it made so much sense for Shawn Michaels to kind of resonate and just kind of, you know, you saw a lot of the Midnight Express and the rockers. So it was really noble for Shawn Michaels to send out that tweet.
Oh yeah, definitely. And even, you know, Rock and Roll Express still got it. It was great seeing them on Total Nonstop Deletion.
Oh, Paquilito, yes.
The Express that rock and rolls. That was great.
Yes, absolutely.
Dealing with all that madness, and they held up in the middle of it with the Hardys. And yeah, that was a great moment seeing that.
Oh yeah. I sure was. Yeah, I was. It was great to see them back. You know, that was a pleasant surprise that they were in the, you know, Apocalypto. And yeah, like you said, when Ricky Morton was in that high rise and just kind of stuck there, it was funny. It was comical, and I've been really critical of TNA, not from a talent standpoint, but from a management standpoint. I've interviewed many people from TNA here: Eli, Drake, Abyss, David Richards. I've interviewed many, Robbie E, a lot of people. And you know, the thing is that the talent is so amazing, you know, but you know, the creative and just the. It seems like it's Nine Lives. I interviewed Al Snow recently, and you know, we were talking about Nine Lives, but you know, it's one of those things that, you know, TNA, they from a creative standpoint, it's a bit lackluster, but when the Hardys are there, I mean, they are just absolutely incredible, and the Midnight Express being a part of that experience at the Hardy compound was great stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I agree with you with the sentiments on TNA. You know, I want to get behind them, but at times, again, not due to talent. It's so many changing creative directions.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully now with Jeff Jarrett in the back again, and you know, Dutch Mantle, hopefully we'll get a little bit back of the glory days. I see them. They've been bringing back some of the old features, like Open Fight Night, I believe, this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
They revamped Feast of Fire, so. We'll see. I mean, I'm glad they're still around. You need places that are, you know, to compete with WWE and alternatives. So, you know, let's just keep hoping they finally get on the right track.
Yeah. Side note, what are your thoughts on the Grand Championship? What's your thoughts on that whole concept?
Not a fan. I hate to say, not a fan of it.
Yeah, me either.
It's just it's a little too contrived with the rules. It's I get what they're going for, but it's way too much going on in a wrestling match.
Oh yeah, it sure is. I just the whole concept of having judges, and you know, it's you can't have judges on a scripted show. You know what I mean? It's like
it's like they're trying to do a mix of like MMA and then the Brawl for All. It doesn't work.
Right. You can't have it. It's already predetermined, and people know. They're looking for the suspense. I mean, wrestling fans know that it's predetermined. It's just, it suspends belief. You know, good wrestling suspends belief. They already know that it's
right.
They already know people know the winners, but a good match suspends belief of that. But to have judges, it just kind of throws it off to me.
Exactly, yeah. And a 2-minute round, 3-minute round takes you right out of it. Like, if you want to do something like that, like, oh, maybe for a hardcore title or something along the effect. But, yeah, the rounds and it falls flat for me. That's just my opinion, but, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. So the Patriots win the Super Bowl. You're in New York, right?
Yes.
Does that make you a Jet or a Giant?
I'm more of a Jet fan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, it's New England, you know, it's a man, Tom Brady. I am an Ohioan, you know, born and raised through and through, Buckeye for life. And, you know, I'm a huge Ohio State fan. Brady's from Michigan. So, you know, it's hard for me to get behind them. Plus, I'm a big Titans fan, too. And, you know, they're not necessarily rivals in AFC, but kind of rivals in AFC. So I'm never, you know, I can't be a Patriots fan. I was rooting for the Falcons just because they were the underdogs. They haven't really experienced that, you know, type of feel.
Right.
But you know, they were down 25 points and they came back in the fourth quarter to win. Yeah. As much as I do not like the Patriots or Tom Brady, you know, I could not do anything but to give them the utmost respect and kudos. And Brady, you know, he's the man. there's nothing negative I can say about Brady. You know, Deflategate and whatever you want to say, you know, this year was clean, you know, as far as we know. And Brady, you know, showed that he's one of the greatest of all time. And even John Cena commented on it, and he commented, you know, before the Royal Rumble, he talked about Brady, compared himself to Brady on TMZ, and you know, just recently, you know, he also talked, you know, about that, and he tweeted about it, and you know, he was talking about how good Brady is, and I couldn't disagree with him.
You know, coming from wrestling, it was so funny watching that Super Bowl towards the end. Like, I was joking with so many people online, like, saying they booked it so well. You never expected that at the head, like, oh, you know, there's no way the Patriots coming back. And within no time, they came back tied the first overtime in history, and they won.
I said,
oh, man, like, we were just going on and on. You know, they, like, well, this has to be Heyman booking this.
Yeah.
You know, this is basic, you know, Styles versus Cena. Cena has to run the big stage. Like, oh, you know, don't worry. They'll get, you know, they'll get the win back on Monday Night Football when the season resumes.
Exactly. going into overtime was the dusty finish.
Exactly, yeah.
it was just one big, you know, one big booking episode. It sure was, you know, comparing the Super Bowl. Yeah. Compared it to WWE creative or pro wrestling creative, period, was I agree with you 100%.
It was a great game, yeah, but it was just so funny watching that. Like, no way this was gonna happen. And
I agree with you. I was shocked. I was going to put it up because in my office is I have an office studio where I hold the show, and then. I have a big screen projector that is outside of my office studio, but I watched it actually on my tablet because I'm a PhD student, so I was doing some finals in my office, and I was like, you know, I'll just kill two birds with one stone. I'll put the tablet on, you know, in my office right next to my computer screens, and so I was watching it. But I was concentrating more on work. And so when Atlanta kept, you know, tallying up the score, I was like, okay, so I don't have to get distracted too much. I'll just really do more listening. And then, you know, when they came back and then the fourth quarter came, they kept coming back. I was like, oh, my goodness. Now I'm going to have to be distracted from doing finals. I'm going to have to do two things at once and keep looking at my tablet while I'm looking at both my computer screens and doing finals. And, you know, it was like, oh, man, they're really going to come back. You know, it was one of those things like, I cannot believe this has happened. I was just ready to not be distracted and just kind of, you know, enjoy the whole Super Bowl feel like I do every year. But, you know, the Patriots strike again. Yeah, I was impressed. I mean, you know, I concluded when I went into overtime, I said, this is pretty much the nail in the coffin that the Patriots are going to wrap this one up again. I was disappointed, but at the same time, you know, I couldn't do anything but to, you know, tip my hat off to the Patriots. Yeah, they did a fantastic job. And like you said, you know, it was the comeback story of ages, you know, but at the same time, you know, it was great. We're going to bring on another co-host tonight to talk about the Patriots and the Falcons real quick. He's been our ongoing co-host from Under the Mat Radio, ladies and gentlemen, none other than Evan Tech Prout. It's great to have you on the show tonight with also with AJ. AJ Pan is the other co-host tonight, and Evan, let us know your thoughts on the Super Bowl game.
What's going on, guys? Live. Good to be here. Pancakes and Power Slams. How y'all feeling?
Doing good.
Got a shout out Waffles and Wrist Locks. Is always picking around with Thunderstone with that. Pancakes and Power Slams. Shout out to the NFL creative team, better than the WWE creative team, of coming back. You know, the Patriots are doing the Shawn Michaels of the 90s or the John Cena comeback.
Big match, John.
Yeah. I always joke, you know, I should always joke about the Illuminati and Trump and, you know, the Illuminati and the Freemasons took a hold of the Super Bowl. But, I mean, granted, I did a vote on my show, so a lot of people say, is it the greatest comeback or the greatest collapse? It's the greatest collapse, so I'm very heavy into football. And nothing against Brady. I'm not a big Brady fan, but he's a great QB, so is Belichick, and being angry and evil, Oscar the Grouch. But at the end of the day, all the Falcons had to do their last drive when he was up 28-10, all they had to do was run the ball two more times and kick a field goal. So he had to do. They got cute, kept trying to throw it, and he got torched. I mean, it was the Falcons' game to lose. It's not anything against the Patriots, you know what I'm saying, because I'm a Ravens fan from Baltimore. But the fact of the matter is that you up by 25 points. All you had to do was run the clock out. You kick a field goal, you up by 28 by then. The game is over. Control the ball. It's basic stuff.
Yeah.
But the Falcons gave it up. And, you know, now we got Tom Brady. And the reason why I say it's not rigged is because Roger Goodell, we know, he didn't want to shake Brady's hand. He's been trying to he basically played the real-life evil Vince or the evil Bischoff where Tom Brady was the Stone Cold Steve Austin or the Sting or whoever you want to. He didn't want him to win. And the fact that Roger Goodell had to shake crybaby Brady's hand in front of all of those people, all of those viewers, and for him to no-sell all of those bulls, you know Goodell didn't want Brady on him to win.
Yeah, but Goodell was a Vince McMahon heel that night.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was.
Absolutely.
So shout out to Super Bowl Lee. That's all my nephew.
Yeah, L.I. Yep, Super Bowl Lee. Absolutely. So AJ, Seth Rollins sidelined with injury last week with the Samoa Joe attack. I actually, when they played, I mean, they were playing the video, and when they replayed the video, I saw the specific spot where he tweaked his knee real bad when he was coming when Samoa Joe kind of jumped on him to get him in the coquina clutch, and then you know I also wrote an article on SportsKeed about when it happened, basically, or I wrote on the Inquisitor as far as what happened when he asked him if he was okay, and then Seth Rollins said, "I hope so." So, there's some reports, you know, WWE, you know, kind of posted on their website that the status is still unknown. They talked on Raw, you know, his message that he had as far as still going against Triple H. You know, there's some reports saying that it's about basically his evaluation is about the 6 to 8 week thing. He'll make it in time right before Mania, but at the same time, WWE is very cautious. I did write about this as well. WWE is very cautious about bringing him back for just liability purposes. But, you know, there's some recent reports saying that it's still in the books. And then there's also some, you know, talks about them kind of pulling an audible to do Triple H and Shane McMahon. What are your thoughts about all this?
It's a shame, once again, to see Rollins hopefully not off the, you know, the WrestleMania card he missed last year's. He's come back strong. He's been doing, you know, besides the Finn Balor incident, he's been doing his thing, and he's finally caught his stride, I think, now as a full-fledged babyface. And, you know, people have been looking forward to him, his feud with Triple H. So So to have this happen, and now with Joe's debut, and now it's the heat's going to fall on him a little bit. You know, just hopefully you never want to see anybody get hurt. So,
yeah.
You know, hopefully Rollins is back in no time, and, you know, hopefully he is. I mean, these guys are monsters. So, you know, those 6 to 8 weeks sometimes, I mean, look at Cena. He's come back, you know, within, they call, you know, 6 to 8 months, and he's back in four. So hopefully Rollins can heal fast, and he's back to, you know, build a proper Mania feud with Honor.
It's true. Evan?
Let's not forget, guys. The Giant fell from Cobo Hall. He fell from the tall building. He was able to be resurrected and come back that night at Halloween Heaven.
That's
remember
true.
That?
Very true.
That's true. Yeah.
The bad fucking
bag on Hogan.
Yeah. You know, The Rock got beat up in vehicular manslaughter and all of that, and came back in 3 weeks with this broken ribs, the DDP bandages. But the series, I did, when I watched Raw, they was telling you Featherstone off air, and I did see Riley. I saw it when it first happened. I was like, his knee didn't go right. You know, this mm-hmm. you know, being a former wrestler, you know, being an athlete, I was like, it looked bad. And then you wonder, is, and I said this early, is it really karma catching up with Rollins, seeing as how some people made a reference, you know, he injured Balor won the Universal title at the SummerSlam, the powerbomb on the barricade now, and then he injured, separated shoulder. Balor hurt, jacks up the whole program. Before that, you know, our man Sting, you know, terrible powerbomb. Sting is injured, the GOAT. So is it karma coming back on Rollins? And then, you know, Rollins is, you know, I know he's a great guy. People worked with him. He's not a malicious worker. And we know, you know, Bret Hart, who's kind of like Tom Brady, crybaby Bret Hart, hates Rollins. He's already, not really hates him, but he said tons of time again that Rollins is unsafe to work with. But I feel for Rollins, man. He was just getting his steam and getting his stride, and he gets hurt. So we'll see. It's uncertainty. Hopefully, this injury leads to a lot of us, even us in media, with our sources and us being in the know, we really don't know what's going to happen. And that could be good for us to all have shows, because we don't know. Will Rollins be ready for Mania? Will they do like a, you know, every year Mania has this brawl type segment, like they do with they did with the Wyatts and Rock and Cena, and, you know, they did with the Rock 1 year and Hogan. Will Rollins do a surprise appearance? So we honestly don't know. So, I mean, guys,
I think
really
that'd be the best. I think that'd be the best for Rollins this year. I think that he'll probably be cleared or decent enough to come back. I don't. I mean, with as much as Rollins, as hard as Rollins goes, I think coming right back, you know, from being good and you know, good to go as far as being cleared, I think coming right back and he wants to give his all at WrestleMania, I think that's a bad call. I think WWE should be very cautious because, you know, if it gets to the point, I mean, similar to Daniel Bryan and the cold concussion thing, if you don't give it enough time to really heal, you know, and I know that both Daniel Bryan's he's fantastic. You know, he's one of the best wrestlers in the past decade. But it's like, yeah, you know, you got to get some time to fully heal. Because if you come back prematurely, it'll just be worse off. And I think, you know, with Seth Rollins, he's only 30 years old. He's already had knee surgery. He just recently had a second one. And I just don't think it's something that you want to play with. I think having a run-in, I think if it's a, and I wrote about this, I think if it's a Shane McMahon Triple H match, I'd be fine with it, because it would give an opportunity. See, picture this, AJ and Evan, picture this. Shane McMahon, Triple H, so anything Shane McMahon, you know, competes, it's a one-off. He doesn't continue storylines because he's just, you know, he's just the entertainment factor for the big events. So it'll be a one-off. Imagine if Seth Rollins came in and assisted Shane McMahon with defeating Triple H, and that caused Rollins to defect to SmackDown. Just think about Rollins AJ, Rollins, Corbin, Rollins, Miz. And, you know, SmackDown is very depleted of strong babyfaces at the moment. And Rollins could be, you know, one of the strongest babyfaces on SmackDown and feud with someone for a few months, maybe Corbin or Miz or something like that. And because, you know, SummerSlam is a, you know, it's an all-in, it's an all-play, you can do Triple H versus Seth Rollins because Triple H can, you know, weeks before SummerSlam, Triple H can come in and he can interfere in a Seth Rollins match. What are your thoughts on that, AJ?
I would like to see more of a, the way they built the Rollins storyline. I would like to see it kind of finish on Raw just the way it's been built. Even I thought the angle they did on NXT TakeOver was fantastic. I did not expect that at all. It was like just watching it and with the announcers talking, all of a sudden Rollins in the ring with a hoodie. It was great old school stuff. So I haven't been excited for Blake's feud in years. This got me excited.
that's a very good point.
From a business standpoint, 100%, I agree they should, you know, be cautious with Rollins. You know, watching it, I would love to see, you know, Rollins be able to compete. But yeah, definitely, I think a run-in would be the best option at this point.
Yeah, I agree. So, Evan, a shocking statistic on the last time the Ascension were in a pay-per-view match. They picked up the win. Well, Victor picked up the win on SmackDown. We'll talk about SmackDown here in just a bit. The Ascension is just they're the laughing stock of the tag team division for the past, you know, decade. I interviewed Ricardo Rodriguez a few weeks back, and he came up with the idea of just really the Ascension as, you know, cryptic Illuminati style, you know, characters. And I mean, they've taken such a plummet, you know, since they left NXT. And the last time they were on a pay-per-view, I believe it was September of 2015. That was the last time they won a match, and just the statistic that they had of being on the pay-per-view was just embarrassing, and they never win matches, and they're just so embarrassing. I can't do anything but, and this is sad too, but it just seems like they're going to be future endeavored soon, and I hate saying that about anyone's job, but the Ascension, even if they try to bring them back of someone notable, it's really hard to really to get into. I'm reading my article here on SportsKita. The last time the Ascension participated in an actual pay-per-view match was the Tag Team Elimination Chamber match nearly 2 years ago in May of 2015. They have not won a tag match on SmackDown since September of 15, although they were a part of the winning team in an eight-man match that occurred in September of 2016. And, of course, tonight on SmackDown Live, they won as well. What, Evan, I mean, is there any light at the end of the tunnel for the Ascension?
They won tonight, so that'll give them in WWE world about maybe another 2 months of, you know, if they won tonight, that'd at least give them – make them save to Mania. They may be on like the pregame show or the pregame show or the postgame show. Mm-hmm. But after that, I mean, they're probably featuring David because, you know, after Mania, they always tend to clean house. But it's sad, you know, Connor and Victor, I know one of them, friends with Bruce Hart, and one of them worked in Canada for a while. And did a lot of work in Canada, and he was really good. But they have a good look. As you say, look at the small things. I like how they change up their paint. They're good workers. If they were in the 80s or the early 90s, they would have got over. They really don't need to talk much. They have a good look. They have the face paint, the Illuminati type, post-apocalyptic Mad Max type deal. And all they need to do is just be a strong, tough team. But with the WWE now, you know, being four kids and everybody has to talk and this, that, and the other, You know, when WWE, they have a tendency of bringing somebody in strong. If you don't get over a few weeks, they'll ship you to NXT, and then they bring you back up. And right now, just like the dumps for them. the only way they can get over is if the machine is willing to push them. They already have a hook, and they have to stay on SmackDown. Good Lord, don't let them be on Raw. So, SmackDown has more of a, you know, they have more of a life, shelf life on SmackDown. Your Rhino, you know, Ryder's out. I believe, was it Ryder the one that's out with the knee injury?
Yeah.
You got the Thug, Samoans, Usos. They're trying something new. So, the tag team division of SmackDown is kind of depleted. So, I see, let the Ascension just run. Let them just be the tough tag team of SmackDown.
Yeah. AJ, is there any hope for the Ascension?
I at this point I'd rather see them get back down to NXT because they've just been ruined at this point, which is a shame because they were a fantastic act down in NXT, and as soon as they were brought up, but they had maybe like 2 or 3 weeks of a push, and then they were fighting all these legends, and they get beat down like on one of the anniversary shows by like all the legends. That sealed their fate right there. So maybe a trip back to NXT would definitely, because the tag teams too there, you know, you every time, you know, it's funny when people want to say, oh, I want to see so-and-so go up to NXT, but yeah, now you're taking everybody from NXT at this point, so maybe you kind of need some blood back there.
That's true. Yeah. I think that's a very good point. It helped a couple of people. Like, it really helped Zack Ryder, and it really helped Tyson Kidd too when both of them went back down to NXT. So going back to NXT, NXT now is more popular than it was a couple of years ago when Tyson Kidd was in the championship picture. So I mean, going to NXT isn't really much of a demotion, especially if someone like a Breezango or something like that, that would be more of a promotion because they'll be top stars. So you're making a good point. So 30 for 30. very, very interested. Did anybody see that?
I did not get a chance to see it. I do want to catch it. I have not.
I watched it.
It was really good. What's your take on it, Evan?
I loved it. It's you know, me being a big sports enthusiast, I love all the 30 for 30s. I still have yet to watch every single one. But I loved it. Around that time, it's funny because I never watched the XFL game before. I remember the whole promos. I just never got a chance to watch it. I was huge in the wrestling at that time. But it was good to take you back at the time of the millennium, in 2000, 2001. It was very well done. Bob Costas and everyone, Vince and Dick Ebersol and he hate me guy. So it was really very well done. It had a different feel and look to it, which I love about the 30 for 30s. Everyone's different because they're directed by different people. Jesse Ventura spoke. So I thought it was very well done. I recommend it to anybody. Got a little Vince with that black jacket. The XFL. I was joking with conspiracy theory from a legit source I got in the business. Jesse Ventura alluded to this, and somebody else that still does work in WWE, that the NFL is a part of why the XFL didn't work. Because think about it, how ironic is it that the gasoline, someone forgot to pour gasoline and fill the generator with gasoline? Come on now. Like, you know that's not on Vince's watch. You know that wouldn't go down on Ebersol's watch. So it had to be a plant. The NFL knew what was going on there.
There were some very interesting, and I watched every single week of XFL. As Donald Trump would say, huge XFL fan. I actually have a Chicago Enforcers XFL T-shirt.
Nice.
Yeah, that I. You know what? I wear it, but it's washed now, and I might sell that joker on eBay. And
the stock went up.
That's right, man. People are looking for those T-shirts. I got one from 2001. I bought it in 2001. I was a big fan of the XFL. I watched every week. I watched the Chicago Enforcers, and yeah, I got an Enforcers T-shirt, and in the back it has all the teams on there. So, yeah, it was really I liked it. I liked the XFL. It was really cool. Rod Smart with the he hate me, and there were a bunch of other nicknames. It was different. It was innovative. It was creative. But I can definitely tell by watching the whole thing, the 30 for 30, I could point out all of the huge mishaps that the XFL did have, and they did have a lot. I mean,
right.
It was the quality of football was very subpar most of the time. But I liked the gimmick of the XFL. But yeah, it was good stuff. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the Raw and SmackDown review. We'll be right back. AJ, what are your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown this week?
You know, SmackDown, to me, I think SmackDown is the superior program right now since the brand extension. To me, it's just a head and shoulders above right now. Mm-hmm. So many more. There's more of an opportunity there, I think, where Raw is still what it was prior to the brand extension. It's pretty much the same old thing, where now we're getting more fresh characters and more development. You know, The Miz is on a stride. The women's division is great.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good assessment. Evan, what are your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown this week?
The vintage theme song you played for Raw is better than Raw right now. Back when no one knew what the words was for the theme song.
What are you saying?
No one knows. But Raw is... Raw is a 3-hour chore. Joe being in a suit. What? Why is Joe wearing a suit? Why is Joe having a mic? Like, this is uncharted territory for Joe. Why are you holding a microphone? I told somebody, would you rather see Joe carrying around that shank he had in TNA, that little knife, or wearing a suit? But it was good to see Reigns and Joe
with the side paint that he had.
Oh,
boy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was bad.
Let's not go back to that.
that never happened, as we say. That definitely never happened. But, Raw was Raw. It was basic, a chore. It is what it is. Grand Daddy Bird comes out and he's not bleeding for once, and he still was blown up after 2 minutes. I've interviewed Goldberg last year. He's a great guy. He's still strong as heck. If you're blown up just walking from the entrance ramp to the ring, you're not running like Warrior, and then something's wrong. But
yeah,
he's going against Owens at Fastlane. I leaked it 2 months ago on my show that Goldberg was going to face Owens. He was going to beat him for the title at Fastlane. Then we get to hear the IWC cry, moan, and sniff and snot about the part-time was winning the title. But it's like, well, you got Owens this champ, and the Raiders aren't really helping. So
yeah,
Raw was Raw.
That's my deal on that. I agree with you.
SmackDown superior show. SmackDown was good. The four way in the beginning was good. Daniel Bryan looked like a middle schooler in the ring with all of the people. I joked on my show earlier tonight and said Raw is the land of the giants. It's a lot of huge men on Raw, and SmackDown is basically WWE's version of ROH and Lucha Underground. Everybody's average and everybody can wrestle. We got to see Cena Orton for the 999th time for the first time again, and I like what he did with Bray, and I like how they're insinuating Harper. You know, they kind of download him into the mix here. So,
mm-hmm.
Still a good show of SmackDown all around. And I hate the kiddie table. Why do we need a four-person announce team? Why do we need it?
Terrible.
Is David Otunga, the only time he gets a face-to-face alone angle shot is because of Black History Month. So shout out to
right.
Otunga. Enjoy February.
I noticed that too.
Because once March hits, buddy, that's it.
Yeah, I noticed too. I said, oh, here's your solo shot on Otunga. How about that for Black History Month prelude? There you go. Rosa Parks, perfect time to zoom in on David Otunga.
And WWE's just like school. I was telling my daughter and my girlfriend, was just, they teach us the same old stuff as Rosa Parks and Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. There's so many others. Thurgood Marshall. It's like you got W.E.B. Du Bois. People say Du Bois. You got the guy who created Famous Amos, the black guy who created the traffic light. So many other black people. Benjamin Banneker, Madam C.J. Walker, George Washington Carver. There's so many other black pioneers that no one ever talks about. But the same five or six people. Nothing against them. Thank you.
Yeah, but listen, the five or six is going to be told courtesy of David Otunga. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the Raw and SmackDown. I thought Raw was good. I thought Raw was surprisingly good. Here's the thing. Goldberg kind of blending in with nowadays Raw was not very good. I like when he kind of put himself away and just did the whole Lesnar thing, but kind of migrating into, you know, Kevin Owens. It just, and again, to me, it just really shows how much of a gap it is as far as a larger-than-life character with Goldberg and Kevin Owens. I mean, it really shows how much of a gap it is right now. But because the last time Goldberg was, you know, kind of it was in the segment with Jericho and Owens, it was a disaster. But this time I think it worked. I like the whole writing his name on the list, and, you know, Goldberg just made the list. I mean, Portland ate that up, and it was, you know, they popped huge for that. And I'm glad that they did. I'm glad that they still, as much as I criticize modern-day wrestling fans, and one of the criticisms is they're saying one more time for Dolph Ziggler as he's hitting Apollo Crews and Kalisto with a chair, and as soon as he did it, they boo him. I'm like, what? Make up your mind. Do you want to do one more time? We're going to boo him for hitting the chair. I mean, that just made no sense to me. But I do like the fact that they're still chanting Goldberg, the resounding Goldberg chants. I like that they're doing that because they were talking, and there were a lot of talks that the WWE was very cautious with, hoping that, you know, the troll, you know, smarky crowd doesn't turn on Goldberg, but I'm really happy about that. Akira Tozawa did a fantastic job. Great debut. I liked the Joe Reigns setup. I think Reigns did a fantastic job on the mic. I was very impressed with Reigns on the mic. He looked natural. He looked heelish. I mean, if he finally gets the okay with the turn, I think that he'll really get an opportunity to get more confident on the mic, because he's starting to get that heelish type of feel to him again. And when he were talking about, you know, you got two choices and things like that, I think that really worked for him. It was really good. On SmackDown, I think SmackDown was good too. Corbin and Styles. I'm wondering if somehow we'll see Corbin and Styles further out than Elimination Chamber, especially with Corbin taking the win on AJ. And AJ Styles to me is like Chris Jericho in 99. Like, he was so over that he came in as a heel. He was getting cheered so much that they just said whatever and they just turned him face. And it's kind of like, you know, AJ, he keeps getting cheered. He's trying. He was telling the crowd to hush, and he was still getting cheered. So It's probably a failed project for AJ as far as just keeping him heel.
WWE's got to be eating crow. WWE now, the past 5-6 years, is TNA legends, ROH legends, indie legends. We need to see where the world of wrestling entertainment and where the end all be all, and no one pays attention to TNA and those other shows. But yet,
no.
Most of your top guys, NXT and WWE, you know, main rosters at TNA, ROH, and indies. And like we said, you got Rollins.
Yeah.
Besides Reigns, everybody else is indies or TNA, ROH. So it's good to see AJ and you know, see a lot of the young guys, Corbin and The Miz. I think The Miz right now is the best he's been since he had his title run back in Mania 27.
Yes, he's
great.
100%.
And like I said, not since when, you remember when Cena was, baby Cena with Thuganomics, when he used to be on a commentary team spitting all those, that rap stuff, and he didn't understand it. I love The Miz on the mic. So this had The Miz commentate and have him go back and forth with Corbin like last week. That segment alone was better than Raw's been the past 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. And as he says, when my hand goes up, your mouth goes shut. I think that's a fantastic line. So Cena Orton was a good match. I really, really, really like what they're doing with Harper. They should go full out all in with Harper as a babyface. He was getting yes chance when he was squaring up against Wyatt. I hope that they don't hurry up and have Wyatt win the title. And then hurry up and set that up for Mania with him and Orton. I really hope they don't do that. I just really hope they don't. Because I want to see Harper and Wyatt at Mania. You can't just rush, something like that leading into Mania. So I sure hope they don't rush that. Real quick, let me give a shout out to my friend Bobby Fulton from the fantastic NWA legend. I'm going to big weekend for me covering wrestling. I'll be heading to the World Class Professional Big Time Wrestling event. Everyone who's listening, we got tens of thousands of listeners. Whoever's in Ohio, Hilliard, Ohio, on Saturday, February the 11th, ladies and gentlemen, World Class Professional Big Time Wrestling in Hilliard, Ohio, featuring Abdullah the Butcher. WWE Hall of Famer Abdullah the Butcher is going to be called Night of the Butchers in Hilliard, Ohio. And the address is it's at the Edwards Building in the Fairgrounds in Hilliard, Ohio. Abdullah the Butcher and Bushwhacker Luke, also a Hall of Famer, Bushwhacker Luke. Once again, Hilliard, Ohio, 4700, I believe, Cemetery Road in Hilliard, called Puff Palace. I went to the one in Zanesville. It's about 45 minutes outside of my house, and it was fantastic, and I'll be there again. And it was one of the, and I've said this on my show before, I think last week or week before, I haven't missed a Raw event. I haven't missed a live Raw event since 1999. That's so almost 20 years, and I've been to that goes to dedication for you.
Did you beat Goldberg?
I've been to NXT. I've been to ROH. Multiple NXT events. Multiple ROH events. I've been to independent events. I've been to dozens and dozens of dozens of wrestling events, and this is probably one of the greatest ones that I've seen, not because of the talent, not because of the flips, but because it was the old school feel to it. It was the hero versus villain. It was the face versus heel. It was absolutely fantastic. So for those in Ohio, for those in Columbus and Hilliard and surrounding areas, come to World Class Professional Big Time Wrestling on Saturday, February the 11th at 7:30 p.m., featuring Abdullah the Butcher, Bushwhacker Luke, and of course my boy Bobby Fulton from the Fantastics. And of course on Sunday in Columbus, Ohio, Ring of Honor, ladies and gentlemen, they're kicking off the big interaction. Cody Rhodes will be there. My favorite, Jay Lethal, will be there. The Bullet Club will be there. That's at Express Live, downtown Columbus. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the flavor of the week. Here we go.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited about this moment. Without further ado, each and every one of us, we'll start with AJ. Top five tag teams of all time. There's your alley-oop.
This was tough. This was tough to narrow down. Number five, I'm going to go with the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff Hardy. You know, ever since their debut, you know, multiple tag team title reigns, kind of, you know, innovated that ladder match for tag teams. And even now, they've been able to reinvent themselves with Broken Matt and Brother Nero. Yeah, they've stood the test of time. And, yeah, mm-hmm. got to give it to the Hardys.
Yeah. Before you go to number four.
I'll fade away and classify myself as obsolete.
What's your number
I love
four?
It.
What's your
number
four?
Number four, we're going to go with Edge and Christian.
Ah.
Okay. You know, two great singles guys and Hall of Famers. You know, there are hopes, Christian, I'm sure, will be a Hall of Famer, too. And, you know, they had it all around from the Brood, and they transitioned to the, you know, they had the comedy stuff too, but they were excellent talents in the ring and one of the innovators with the TLC matches. Always been a huge fan of Edge and Christian.
Nice. Number three,
you're going to go with the Hart Foundation, Bret the Hitman Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart. When I was growing up, that was one of the, that's when I got introduced to tag team wrestling, and just seeing, you know, the smaller Bret Hart and the mix of him with the powerhouse Jim Neidhart, and just the way they blended, you know, the pink and black attack, and they complemented each other perfectly. So for that old school, you know, at that time period, they were one of the definitive tag teams.
Nice. One of the best theme songs of all time as well.
Oh, yeah, without question. And I'm glad they used a, you know, a remix version for Natty now, and they had it back, you know, for when Tyson Kidd and Harry Smith were a team.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Number two,
this is probably a surprise a lot of people. Perry Saturn and John Cronus, the Eliminators.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I love their work in ECW.
Meet the leg.
In ECW, they were my favorite team of all time in ECW. They just had that insane style, but they were also incredibly talented and high flying. Like, you never expect some of the stuff you'd see out of John Cronus.
Yeah.
Perry was a little bit of a technician and a bit of a brawler. The Eliminators, and I believe they were 3-time tag team champions, and they held their own in there against teams like RVD and Sabu, the Dudleys. I wish they had more time to, you know, shine in their career, but for me, they put a place on my top five.
Absolutely. And number one, there we go.
Number one, we're going to go with Rick and Scott Steiner, the Steiner Brothers.
Oh, good choice. Yes.
Yeah. Going back to their NWA and WCW days, they were just, you know, I always thought Scotty was so cool. As soon as I saw the Frankensteiner, and then right after you'd see Rick run in and do the dog face stuff and growl. And they were just phenomenal as a tag team.
Yes, very true. Great choices. Awesome stuff.
Thank you.
Evan, Evan, number five for you.
Brickhouse Brown and Sweet Brown Sugar on his show.
Okay.
This show.
Oh, wow.
Courtesy of David Otunga.
Yes. See, y'all remember that. You might listen to look that up. Right. Number five would have to be, surprised people, the Hollywood Blondes. Stone Cold Steve Austin with hair. Wayne Cutler and Flying Brown Pillman. Great tag team. Like you said, of course, we know why he couldn't be because of politics. And granted, glad he didn't work out because he went and got Stone Cold, even though leaves Cannon. But Hollywood Blondes is number five.
Great music, too.
So long. The intro itself is 3 minutes long.
Yeah. Who's your number four?
Number four, Harlem Heat. Stevie Ray and Booker T. I'm not saying it just because they're black, because Black History Month, always loved them. Wherever they was with Colonel Sanders, Rob Parker, where he was with Sensational Sharia by himself. The theme music was great. There was this T-Big black dudes that beat the hell out you. The outfits was great. They mumbled whatever they wanted to in the camera. Nobody knew what they meant. They had unidentified wounds on their body. Great, great matches. Stevie Ray was the big power man. Booker T was the athletic one. So
come on, man. They got those wounds from 110th Street, sucker.
Yeah, he did. He come for you, Hogan.
Right. Who's your number three?
Number three, Rock and Roll Express. I'm good buddies with Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. I knew you'd come. I got a tip from Ricky. He texted me last week about the Hall of Fame. But the greatest babyface tag team of all time. The Rockers were great, so was the Hardys. But Ricky and Robert Gibson, the matches they had, the feats they had, the bandanas, just bar none. Now, watch their matches in Japan if you get a chance. They were just great all around.
Number two?
Midnight Express. Any combination. Dennis Corgi and Bobby Eaton or Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane with Cornette. Theme songs was inconsistent, but that beautiful Bobby had was great. That never really got a chance to start because it was so long.
Beautiful.
Like some kind of like 1980s kind of like you know, one of them 1980s C-list, you know, soft core movies. But
Galactica type of deal, yeah.
Yeah, Galactica stuff, right? But Cornette was great. Eaton. Never waste of they both was great. How many times can you think of a tag team that's still legendary? Dennis Corgi was great with Eaton, and then when Stan Lane came in with his Savat kick and Russian sidekicks, and it just was wonderful, man.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, number one, here we go.
The Malkies. No, I'm just joking. The Road Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
The Road
Warriors. Great choice.
Hawking Animal. An honorable shout out to the Hart Foundation, I love, and the Steiners and Strike Force and all of them, the Rougeos. But the Road Warriors, they was nasty. They was mean. They legit hurt people. The marketing was great. Paul Ellering was great. They just yelled in the microphone. And yes, they were stiff, but it worked. I mean, they worked great with the Steiners. They worked great with the Horsemen, with the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnights, even in WWE and WWF. So, and I love the Dudley C, but best tag team of all time, bar none, Road Warriors.
Tell them, Hawk.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So my top five. I've got the British Bulldogs for number five. Awesome theme music. Loved when the Hearts were heels, and the British Bulldogs in the 80s. I think they didn't really get their due. I think they should have had more, been more of the tag team title champion top, you know, reign, but they weren't. I didn't think they got their due in the 80s. Number four for me is Harlem Heat. Huge Harlem Heat fan. They were my favorite, one of my favorites of all time. And modern day, you know, end up WCW, that was a huge Harlem Heat fan. Booker T's one of my top five of all time. And I was a big fan of the Harlem Heat when they were the Ebony Experience back in GW.
Yes.
That's when I started liking them back in 91, 92, when they were in GWF, when they were the Ebony Experience. And I never understood why their boots never matched their tights. It was just color every single time. Like, dude, match. What in the world is going on here? Number three was
that might have been the doing of Maniac Mac. That,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Maniac Mike Davis at that time.
Yes. Maniac Mike Davis was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he set the tone for like Evad Sullivan and Norman Ellis. You know what I mean? Like the characters like that, like really, really off. But you know, even before then, like remember he was a part of the rock and roll RPMs back in like kind of
yes. Yeah, they were. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. The Rock and Roll Express number three. I mean, pretty much talked about it. Ricky Moore and Ryan Rockford against him. One of the best tag team feuds of all time with the Midnight Express. Number two was Steiner Brothers for me. I was a huge fan of Rick Steiner back in the day. And number one is the Road Warriors. I mean, just, you know, bar none, you know, just Miles, just, I mean, they are just the greatest of all time. I love the shoulder pads. I played football when I was a kid. I wanted spikes on my shoulder pads. I wanted face paint. They were just the larger than life characters that were absolutely amazing. All right, real quick, we've got a few minutes left. Let's get to Elimination Chamber predictions. AJ, who you got between Apollo Crews and Kalisto against Dolph Ziggler?
I hope at this point I really want to see Dolph finally get something. It's like so frustrating as a supporter of his. So I'm really hoping with this turn of his now, it leads somewhere substantial for him.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I'm going to go with my heart.
You got Ziggler?
Yeah, I'm going to go with my heart's going to go with Ziggler.
Cool. Who you got, Evan, real quick?
Hill Ziggler.
Yep, Ziggler for me.
Yeah,
Orton and Harper. Who you got, Evan?
Orton. But
AJ.
Harper probably against Shane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though I'd like to see Harper, like I'm, you know, go with everything you said. I love that they're finally, you know, giving him a singles push, and I love the pop he got tonight. But you know, going into Mania, it's gotta go with Orton.
That's a good point. Orton as well. Harper might get his moment in WrestleMania, though. Mickie James and Becky Lynch. Evan.
Mickie James, she just came back. She's a legend, so you got to put her over.
AJ.
It's tough for WWE booking. I mean, even though she just came back, I think her first match back was Lightning Waste in a six-woman tag, on the pre-show at the last event. But, I love Becky, but yeah, I gotta go with Mickey on this one too. It's, you know, her first singles match back, and yeah, they need to establish her against their newer fans.
Yeah, I say Mickey just because I see it happening again at Mania. Women's Championship, Naomi or does Bliss retain? AJ.
I love what they're doing with Naomi, but I'm a huge Alexa Bliss fan. I think she's holding down the women's division right now. Her character's on point. She's really up to her work, and I have to go with Alexa all the way.
Evan.
I would love Naomi, but I think more money's in Naomi chasing it, so I got to go with Alexa Bliss.
That's exactly why I think Naomi won't win it this time. There'll be a chase. All right, real quick, a few seconds. AJ, who wants a tag team turmoil match?
We got to go with American Alpha. They're the top team right now, and they're a fantastic team.
Yeah. Evan.
Same thing. American Alpha, New Steiners, going to win it.
Yeah. I'm going with the Ascension. No, I'm not. American Alpha. All right.
Although that room, Brizongo all the way.
Right, might as well. Nikki Bella and Natalya.
I gotta go with Nikki. Nikki, she's got this. She got the Bella machine behind her. Total Bellas, total divas. She's there, the face of the, you know, for them, for the media. Nikki Bella's there. There
cool.
goes.
We got 30 seconds, Evan. Who you got?
Yeah, same thing, Nikki Bella.
Cool. All right, real quick, AJ, who you got? Elimination Chamber.
My heart wants to say The Miz, but my head's gonna go with Bray Wyatt.
Who you got, Evan?
Bray.
I'm gonna go. I think they'll keep it on Cena. All right, real quick, Evan Under Matt Radio. We have like 15 seconds, so let us listeners know your Twitter information.
Everybody, please check out our Twitter, Under the Mat Radio, live every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Our Twitter is at @tech_UTMR, Under the Mat Radio on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Please check out Russell Lamia, who gave us a shout out about 10 things you didn't know about Kenny Omega.
Cool. All right, 15 seconds. AJ, who you? What's where can we find you on social media?
Follow me on Twitter at AJPan_PCA. You keep up with me on, you know, ECWA Wrestling, BCW Wrestling, and Fiesta Pro Wrestling has come up. So,
awesome. Thank you both. Fantastic time. Thank you to my boy Jay Lethal. The World Class Press for Big Time Wrestling this weekend. God bless.